and welcome to Mark Bites, episode 201. I'm Elaine Giles, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike Thomas. In this episode, digital ID dilemmas, Timmy's timely trades, and the council's calendar carnage. But first, we heard from Jammy. Now, while we include Jammy's thoughts in our backbites section, we've decided that Jammy deserves a special chapter marker. Herewith known as Jammy's Sandwich. Check it out on your podcast player. Here are his thoughts about MacBytes 199. 192 gig of RAM will make your studio the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Pilgrimage to Washington, I'm howling. I'm still of the mind that children shouldn't have access to the internet at all. Parents should be controlling what they see, not laws and regulations that will always be easy for children to circumvent. Send kids back to libraries for the information gathering they need and do away with this ridiculous protect the children effort that isn't actually about protecting them at all, but more about making personal data extraction mandatory. Now, it actually sounds like the government are coming round to your way of thinking, Jammy. And public opinion seems to be swinging that way too. I think it's the Australian ban on social media for the under-16s that started people thinking. And if that means that the rest of us don't need to provide our inside leg measurements to access our DMs, then it works for me as well. Then Jammy moved on to the value of a YouTube Premium subscription. YouTube Premium is probably the most worthwhile subscription I have. It gives me the music app too, which I use all the time. On the rare occasion I encounter YouTube without Premium, I can't get through a single video. The quantity of adverts is just too unbearable. Then there was some laughter. Can I just say, far too much laughter, Jammy. So much that I feel rather than read out the ha 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 ha, this is appropriate. Jammy continued, you did the update. I can't believe you did that to yourself. Though I'm so glad. If the rest of us must suffer, so too must you. And they will probably move away from it in a version or two. Because what else have they got for updates and innovation other than messing with the UI design? Maybe the next rollout will be sticker roll animation. Also, you can't go Android. I simply forbid it. You won't want a phone that doesn't talk to your other Apple toys. I do feel for you, though. It is truly awful. But we'll get used to it. Wonderful show as always. Looking forward to the next. P.S. Age Studio Plus. Howling. Well, you're not wrong, as it's ugly as anything. And I do agree with you. I just have to hope they come round to our way of thinking and ditch the worst of it before too long. The thing is, I could live with it. I really could, with the two options that they've added after the initial release. But then Vivaldi doesn't work. It's like, really? Fix one thing, break another. I know I'm going to have to put a ticket in with Vivaldi. But, you know, that means a support ticket. I need to lie down for a week before I do that. Anyway, two shows means a second helping of Jammy's Sandwich. Inexplicably, he managed to miss the live recording of the great MacBytes 200 show. But he was quick to catch up and share his listening with a friend. So, over to Jammy. I'm so sad I missed it. I hope you can all forgive me. Christmas socialising and all that. I only vaguely remember Windows Media Centre when I got my first laptop, which had Vista on it, and I don't remember using it either. My friend is here listening to the replay too, and he also agreed about the not-so-scenic Stoke. I'd have also done what Madam did and give the older machine away so I could have the newer one. Though it seems Toblerone Thomas now has the flashier, newer studio with his M3 Ultra. Well, you say that, Jammy. He does, and you're right. But remember, mine was built to order with 192 gig of RAM and a 2 terabyte SSD. So I'm not swapping it. Plus the fact, the thought of building up a machine from scratch. No, I can't face it. I just can't do it. Not even in my 7-week Christmas holiday could I contemplate something so horrific. Jammy then moved on to how tricky it is at listening to your own voice. I got used to hearing recordings of my own voice when I had to listen back to calls when I was a complaints handler. I got used to it, but I still squirm a little a bit when I hear myself. I remember my first iPad. It was the third gen one. Silver, 32 gig. I wanted one so badly so I could start doing digital art. I bought it in 2012 with my only bonus from the above job. And that's so funny, Maya sounds like me as a child with greens. Safi and Ellie inhale anything and love greens. But the 10 pence dog food wouldn't last irrespective of the quality my beagle especially lives to eat. Changing topic. I actually quite enjoy the dentist. I relax in the chair and just leave them to it. Thankfully, so far, I've not had any major issues with my adult teeth. Touch wood. Jammy. Enjoy the dentist! Clearly a man who's never needed any work doing whatsoever. I'm afraid my fate was sealed when I was only 3 months old. I caught a cold. You'd think, no biggie, wouldn't you? It turned nasty. They gave me penicillin. Apparently, I'm allergic. Severely allergic. I stopped breathing. So, they took me off the penicillin and gave me tetracycline. Not bothering to check that it shouldn't be given to anyone under 8 years of age. That was a critical piece of information that they chose to ignore. When your adult teeth emerge, they are permanently stained and disintegrate soon as look at them. So ensued a lifetime of dental treatments. And to make matters worse, I wasn't overly keen to start with, but to make matters worse, I had a dentist when I was 12 and she tried treating me while wearing a neck brace and saying she couldn't see a thing. Not even joking there. I do wonder to this day if the back brace was courtesy of another patient. I escaped that idiot, but I will admit it was a long time before I ventured near another one. Thankfully, I eventually found a new one who is simply amazing. But back to Jammy. I did indeed get the £19 cleaning cloth for free with my nano-textured ornamental M4 iPad Pro. Well remembered. But it's actually something I would not have forked out a dollar for normally. I was amazed that they included it for free. Well, Jammy, so was I. It's not like Timmy not to monetize at every single opportunity. We also asked for everybody's MacBytes highlight. And for Jammy? My highlight of MacBytes was finding an Affinity tutorial by complete accident and binging on the content on YouTube. I've never left. You're my favourite YouTube channel to this day. Ribbed and sensitive, my friend just let out an almighty howl, and then again at the idea of Toblerone Thomas pleasuring Jeremy Clarkson. A wonderful show as always, a real two-hour treat. I'm looking forward to the next 200 shows. Well, so are we. We just need to work out how many five-year diaries it's going to take for the planning. Just saying. But thank you for taking the time to share your listening highlights. Always classic. And we love reading and sharing them. Now, let's get on to the news. Timmy got an early Christmas present. He did. When a Texas judge gift-wrapped a judgment for him. You may recall, you will recall, trust me, the mess that is age verification. A law was due to come into force requiring Apple to check the age of users downloading apps from the App Store. The one requiring Apple to check IDs at the digital door, like some sort of App Store bouncer. Well, just days before it was due to kick in on the 1st of January, a federal judge has hit the pause button. Judge Robert Pittman granted a preliminary injunction essentially saying, hang on a minute, this thing's probably unconstitutional. He had an analogy. He compared it to requiring every bookstore to check ID at the entrance, then getting parental consent before little Johnny can buy a book. Which, well, when you put it like that, does sound a bit much. Now, to be fair to Texas, their heart was arguably in the right place, trying to keep the little children away from inappropriate content. Why the parents aren't charged with doing that is anyone's guess. But Apple's been arguing that achieving this noble goal would require hoovering up sensitive personal data from everyone, even someone trying to download something completely innocuous. Apple wasn't fighting this alone. The lawsuit came from the Computer and Communications Industry Association, which includes Apple, Google, Amazon, and Meta. I know what you're thinking. Yes, that's right. The tech giants actually agreeing on something. Mark your calendars. It's worthy of a national holiday. All very strange, given social media companies like Meta, Snap and X had actually welcomed the Texas law. Funny that. Almost like they quite liked the idea of Apple being responsible for age verification instead of, oh, I don't know, the platforms actually hosting the content. Here's your one-stop shop for permissions, they said, while quietly hoping the buck would stop at Apple's door. Now, this isn't over. Of course it isn't. Lawyers can milk cases for years. Think the interminable Jarndyce case in Bleak House. Texas can appeal, and they probably will. The Fifth Circuit awaits. Add to that, similar laws are bubbling away in Utah, Louisiana, and at federal level, all of which explains why Timmy was spotted doing the rounds on Capitol Hill recently. But for now, Apple gets to keep the App Store bouncer free. At least in the Lone Star State they do. The real question remains, how do you protect children online without turning every app download into a passport control experience? The answer is pretty obvious to me, and Jammy. Parental responsibility. But in the face of those in power being willfully blind to the glaringly obvious, this thing is likely to rumble on. Apple reckons their privacy-preserving age assurance feature is the answer. Letting parents share the child's age range with developers without actually handing over documentation, including a birth certificate. Whether that's genuinely better or just more convenient for Apple, well, that's a conversation for another episode. But for now, Texas's law is on ice, and the constitutional lawyers are sharpening their pencils. Oh, constitutional law. That was on my law degree curriculum. It wasn't something I was looking forward to, actually, because, well, we don't have a written constitution in the UK, so I wondered what we'd spend a year looking at. But a brilliant lecturer meant it turned out to be one of my favourite subjects in the end. I doubt I'd be enjoying working on cases like this, though. It was best I came to my senses and switched to computing. But that's where we're at now. Now, 'twas the night before Christmas, and Timmy treated himself. Something small with deep meaning. No, definitely not. He treated himself to $3 million worth of Nike shares. Not Apple shares, note. No, Nike. 59,000 shares at about $59 each, which takes his total stake to over 105,000 shares. Now, if you've ever wondered why Timmy is always sporting those flashy trainers at Apple events, it's not because he's trying to look down with the cool kids, although I wouldn't rule that out completely myself. He's been on the Nike board since 2005, and since 2016, he's been their lead independent director. Independent. It just park that, we'll come back to it. So when Nike posted absolutely dire quarterly results last week and the stock tanked by 13%, Timmy swooped in with his wallet and said, I'll take 50,000 more, please. Guess what happened next? Let's just say, like lemmings. The moment the SEC filing went public, Nike's stock jumped 5%. That's right. Timmy bought low. News got out, and suddenly investors thought, well, if the Apple guy's buying, it's been spun as a vote of confidence in Nike's new CEO, Elliott Hill. Analysts are noting that this is the largest open market stock purchase by a Nike director in over a decade. Very touching, very supportive, very strategically timed. I'm not saying there's anything legally dodgy here. Morally, on the other hand, well, I'll leave you to ponder that thorny issue. Meanwhile, former Intel CEO Bob Swan also bought some shares. Nobody cared about that nearly as much, though, because, well, former Intel. The moral of the story? It helps to have friends in high places. Or rather, it helps when your friends in high places have $3 million lying around for a well-timed dip buy. Just do it. Indeed. Have we got anything else, Mike?
This one has nothing to do with tech or Apple.
I beg to differ. We dedicated a show titled to, and I quote, The Science of the Bin Collection, The bin calendar is the most complex calendar we have, so it's definitely tech related.
Well, it's a story that I thought you'd all enjoy. Tuesday is bin day here at MacBytes headquarters, or trash day for those from across the pond. Whatever you call it, it's the day that the bins are collected. If you're a regular listener, you'll know that we have different coloured bins. Green for garden waste, blue for cardboard, black for tins and plastic, and grey for everything else. Tuesday was grey and green day.
By grey, you mean real rubbish, which is what it's called here.
I do. The grey bin was full, but the green one was almost empty. All it had in it was a few grass cuttings, so I wasn't even going to put it out. Bins need to be put outside your property by 6:30 a.m. on collection day. That's what it says on the Trafford Council website. However, I don't think ours has ever been collected before midday, and sometimes it's well into the afternoon before they get down our street. So it was the Tuesday before Christmas, and my plan was to take Lola for a walk as usual at 6:15. This is in the morning, obviously. Get back for 7 o'clock, empty the bins, the kitchen bin, the office bin, the bathroom bin, etc., into the grey bin and put the grey bin outside. As I said, I wasn't going to bother with the green one. Then at 7:15, before I'd had the chance to put the grey bin out, I heard the unmistakable rumbling of the bin collection truck. It's okay, I thought, that'll be the green bin truck. Well, I looked out of the window and there was indeed a bin collection truck outside our house. And what was worse, it wasn't for the green bins, it was for the grey bins. If you're wondering how I knew, by the way, are the trucks colour-coded? No, I saw the bin collectors emptying the grey bins into the truck. So I dashed downstairs, bags of rubbish in hand, dashed out the back door, threw the bags of rubbish into the grey bin, and at this point the truck was actually outside our house. So all I had to do was drag the grey bin through the gates and ask one of the collectors to empty it into the truck. I couldn't find the key to open the gate. Now, I have a bunch of keys on a keyring. Front door key, back door key, a key from my mum's house, the gate key. So when I couldn't find the key, I had the bunch of keys in my hand, but it was dark and I couldn't find the key I needed. Eventually, I found it and unlocked the gate, but by this point, the truck had driven off. Luckily, it had only driven to the next street, which was about 100 yards away, and it was going slowly as they were collecting from that street. So there I was, doing the 100-yard dash up the street with a grey bin in tow. The good news? I caught up with the truck and got the bin emptied. Lesson learnt? Whatever time they've collected the bins for the past 51 weeks, 6:30 means 6:30.
The fun and frolics with the bin collection didn't stop there, though, did it?
Didn't it?
Absolutely not. December is when the council issue the new bin calendars. This means we have to allocate time to update our calendars. The schedule is wild. Grey bin collected every other week, green bin every week, black bin every 28 days, blue bin every 28 days. So let's just say handling that mess digitally is a complete nightmare. Or at least it would be without my extensively documented process for dealing with it, which includes all the colour coding as well. We did the update for the next 12 months. I asked about the Christmas exceptions. You told me there were none, which was fine. Only you lied. You completely missed them.
In my defence, they were printed in 4-point font under the printed in Hong Kong message.
That's no excuse. You know how devious the council can be. You weren't the only one, though, were you?
No, I wasn't. It kicked off in the local Facebook group. They weren't happy that the green bin wasn't being emptied this week. That would have been bad enough, but you have to pay extra for the green bin to be emptied. So in effect, we're paying for a service that we're not getting this week.
Nothing new there, then. You do realise you've just described the fact that we have a subscription for our bin collection.
Just another one for our ever-growing collection. This story does involve tech. Well, it involves an oven. And these days, with their buttons and their circuit boards and LED displays, ovens can be counted as tech. Well, they can in my mind. November 2023, I bought a Ninja 10-in-1 foodie oven. Basically, a countertop oven with 10 functions. Bake, air fryer, grill, and more. A month later, I bought another one. Why? Because although it has 10 functions, you can only use one at a time. So if I'm making dinner, I can't use the grill and the oven at the same time. Fast forward to November 2024 and the first oven stopped working. The LED display displayed an error message. I remember calling customer support and the lady sent a link to my phone. I tapped the link and it started a video call. She wasn't interested in me, she wanted me to video the error message and the inside of the oven. Well, I guess it saved sending an engineer out to look at it. Yes, it's broken, she said. It's still under guarantee, so we'll send you a new one. Fast forward to October this year, the replacement stopped working. This time, there were no error messages, it just stopped working. Looking back, there were warning signs. A couple of times during the week leading up to its demise, it just stopped mid-cook. It still had power, the LED display was still working, but the timer had stopped counting down. So again, I called customer support, and again, they sent a replacement. That's the one that we unboxed on MacBites After Hours a few weeks ago. And that one, you'll be glad to know, is still working. But in the meantime, on Tuesday, yes, the same Tuesday we had the bin saga, the oven that I bought in December 2023, you've guessed it, stopped working. Right in the middle of making a batch of gluten-free shortbread biscuits. These ovens aren't cheap, by the way. They cost over £250 each, and Ninja is supposed to be a good make. But to be honest, they do get a good hammering. And as I said to you, nothing is made to last these days. Anyway, I transferred the tray of biscuits to the other oven and finished the baking.
This is why you have multiple ovens. You can't have it carping out mid-biscuit bake.
Absolutely. There would have been more than bad words from you. Then it was off to Amazon to try and find a replacement. Although there's a lot of choice when it comes to countertop ovens, with it being Christmas, many of them weren't able to deliver before January. So I've settled for another Ninja. A slightly smaller one, but at least it arrived before Christmas.
Which meant you were back to full oven capacity for Christmas. And that's before we get on to the Breville Waffle and Toasty Maker.
Yes, my other new Kitchenalia toy. Something else that we unboxed on MacBites After Hours. But that's not really tech. It doesn't even have an on-off button. You just plug it in and off you go. It does make a nice toasty though.
So after our culinary adventures, what did I do on Christmas Day? Geek out, of course. Taking time off from prepping sessions and the like, I decided to try and solve a niggle that had been going on for a couple of months. What was the niggle? YouTube links. Simply the URLs to my live streams. Now, what was the problem? Well, tracking the links I needed when I needed them, to be honest. The link is only created once you create a placeholder for the live event. Then you need to put that link in a million places. Notion for sharing with Mike, multiple emails, announcements, reminders, social posts, presentations, and so many more places. Now, I have a clipboard extender. So once it's copied, you'd think I'd be good. The trouble is that when you search your clipboard history, you can only search for the text that is in whatever you've copied. Now, while I could search for youtu.be, which is the beginning part of the URL, it returned a list of the URLs. I couldn't tell which was which without using the arrow keys to highlight each one and then wait for the preview to load. Now, I did have one idea. My clipboard extender is Raycast, and it has the ability to pin specific clipboard entries to the top of the list. Now, this did help a little. but you still needed to highlight each one and then wait for the preview to load before you knew which link was which. So good, but no t-shirt. And it certainly wasn't scalable. What I really needed was a way to isolate the links and be able to search them independently based on the name of the session and not the actual text of the link. This was a job for Keyboard Maestro. Now, Keyboard Maestro can read the contents of a file, which is key to making this work. Now, by the time Christmas dinner was done with, and I'd watched the Strictly Christmas special, guilty pleasure there, it was all configured and working. So here's what I created. I called the system Link Library, and I created a plain text file, which I called linklibrary.txt. I put that in a Dropbox folder. So in Dropbox, I have a folder called Application Support. In there, I have another folder, Keyboard Maestro. And in there, I created a folder called Links Library. The links are contained within that text file. Not just the links, though, because that wouldn't solve the problem. Each link had an associated description, and the description can be used for the search. Now, I also added, just for good measure, a markdown format option too. So once the required link is selected, I can paste either the naked URL or a markdown version. So there's two macros inside Keyboard Maestro that I use to call up a pick list. Now, a pick list looks a little bit like a launcher. It appears in the middle of your active screen and it lists the contents of the text file. Those two macros, the first one would be paste the link, so that I've got on option L. And the second one is paste the link in markdown format, which I've got on option control and L. So the entries from the linklibrary.txt file are displayed in alphabetical order in my pick list, and I use the arrow keys to move up and down and select one, or I can just start to type and it will search it. Now, you can also specify a default in the macro. It makes sense for this to be my next YouTube live stream, so whatever's coming up next. Now, that requirement could change in the future, but right now it's working. Once you've selected the link, pressing enter pastes the selected link in the selected format into the active application. Now, holding down the option key copies it to the clipboard without pasting it. So it was all absolutely perfect. And then I realized there was still one final pain point left. And that was, on a weekly basis, I'd need to update the file. Editing the link library source file meant I'd have to go and navigate to it and then open it in a text editor. This was a job for Raycast. I created a Raycast quick link to open the source file directly in Sublime Text. Problem solved. This workflow is an amazing time saver. And the process could be adapted for other content that you need access to in the same way. So it's going to be just as important as the black hole workflow that I have. And that is how we roll here at MacBytes HQ on Christmas Day. A nice little behind the scenes peek at what floats our geeky boat. Talking of geeks, Excel time!
Welcome to another episode of Excel Bytes. Today I'm talking about automation in Excel, which sounds technical, but is actually just getting Excel to do your boring, repetitive tasks. I'll be talking about macros, VBA, and Office scripts. Three ways to make Excel work harder so you don't have to. And before you panic and switch off, please stick with me. This isn't about becoming a programmer. It's about understanding what's possible when it comes to automation in Excel. Say you had a process which, done manually, would take 1 hour. And that process was something that you did, say, every week. And that 1 hour assumes you don't make any mistakes. You don't press the wrong key or choose the wrong menu option. You don't miss out a step. Over a year, that's a lot of hours performing the same actions, pressing the same keys, selecting the same menu options. Now, imagine that you could get that process to run automatically by clicking a button or using a keyboard shortcut. And that process, which, as I said, took an hour to do manually, gets completed in under a minute. That's what a macro does. It automates that process. And not only does that save time, it also ensures that the actions that make up that process are performed in the right order and none are missed out. Macros can also include logic. Things like, if this is true, perform these actions. Otherwise, perform these actions. They can perform a series of actions multiple times, and this is known as looping. For example, perform these actions 5 times, or perform these actions until you hit a blank cell. You can even create a macro that allows Excel to talk to other applications. For example, take the data from columns A to C on the current row and create an email from that data. Column A contains recipient name, column B contains recipient email address, column C contains the text for the body of the email. At its core, a macro is a computer program, but instead of being a program that you install on your computer, it's a program that runs inside Excel. In fact, most macros are tied to a specific Excel file. Macros are written in a programming language called VBA, which stands for Visual Basic for Applications. It's a language that's been around for many years. I think VBA was added to Excel in 1993 or thereabouts. And I started learning it and teaching it in 1996 or 1997. And I know that because I was working for a small training company and I'd got myself a VBA book. And I suggested to my then boss that maybe I could deliver some VBA training. Now, if you don't want to become a programmer, and let's be honest, not many Excel users do, if what you want to automate is literally some key presses and mouse clicks, Excel on both Windows and Mac includes a macro recorder. In a nutshell, you hit Record Macro on the Developer tab of the ribbon in Excel. You give the macro a name. You perform the actions in real time, and when you're done, you hit stop record. And all your actions, keystrokes, mouse clicks, menu selections, etc., the ones you performed between clicking record macro and stop record, are recorded and converted into VBA code. This sounds great, doesn't it? Creating a program without writing any code. It is great. But the macro recorder has limitations. It can literally only record keystrokes, mouse clicks, menu selections, and so on. So if you want your macro to include logic or looping, or you want to automate passing information from Excel to Outlook, or Excel to Word, or Excel to any other application, the macro recorder can't handle those situations. And this is where you need to write the VBA code yourself, or get someone else to write it for you. And these days, that could be a person, or it could be AI. Although, as we all know, AI doesn't always get it right. Plus, if a recorded macro needs changing, you'd either have to re-record it from scratch, or edit it. And editing a macro requires knowledge of VBA. VBA is dead. Don't learn VBA. If you do, you're wasting your time. That's not me talking, by the way. That's what I read at least once a week on LinkedIn. Now, I don't know whether the authors of those articles believe that, or they're just writing it for clicks. But let's be honest, Microsoft has made it abundantly clear they're not exactly investing heavily in VBA's future. They've not updated the VBA editor, that's the screen where you write and edit the code, since about 1993. And as far as Microsoft are concerned, VBA works, it's stable, and it'll probably keep working for years to come. Which brings us to Office scripts. Two of the biggest limitations of VBA are that, one, it can't run in a browser, and two, it can't run on mobile devices. And, you're thinking? Well, it means that if you have a file with a macro in it, and you open that file in Excel for web, or the Excel app on a mobile device, the macro won't run. But let's be honest, how many of the 750 million people who use Excel use it in a browser? And how many use it on a mobile? A very small percentage, I'd have thought. To get around those two limitations, Microsoft came up with Office Scripts. Office Scripts are written in a language called TypeScript. TypeScript is similar to another programming language called JavaScript, and programs written in JavaScript or TypeScript can run in a browser and on mobile devices, as well as the desktop version of Excel. Sounds great, doesn't it? True cross-platform automation. But don't get too excited. Office Script can do about 10% of what VBA can do, and has been given even less love by Microsoft than VBA has in recent years. Now, last week we covered Power Query, and you might be wondering, when do I use Power Query versus macros? Because they're both automation tools built into Excel. Simple rule. Power Query is for getting data into Excel and automating the transformation of it. Macros are for everything else. Before Power Query came along, people would create macros to automate what Power Query does. And I'm sure there are some people who are still using those macros. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you were starting out today on the road to automation, if your task involves importing data, cleaning it up, reshaping it, that's Power Query territory. For anything else that needs to be automated, create a macro. And if you're going down the macro route, I personally would use VBA rather than Office Script. Power Query is brilliant at repeatable data transformation. Macros are brilliant at repeatable actions within Excel. So let's say you've got a monthly report template where you need to create a new copy, rename the sheet with the current month, apply specific formatting, add a chart, and protect certain cells. That's not a data thing, that's an action thing. So it's perfect for a macro. Or maybe you're managing a project tracker where you frequently need to copy a task template, update the status colours, insert new rows, and email a summary to your team. Again, macro territory. Here's another one. You've got a workbook with multiple sheets, and you need to print specific pages with particular settings, landscape orientation, fit to one page, and only print if certain conditions are met. Macro, 100% macro. The more repetitive and action-based the task, the better candidate it is for a macro. I'll end with some practical advice. Start small. Don't try to automate your entire workflow on day one. Pick one annoying repetitive task that's not about data transformation and automate that. Another piece of advice is to always test your macros on a copy of your data first. There's no undo button if your macro does something catastrophic. Third thing, document what your macros do. You could do this by creating an accompanying text file or Word document, or you can add the notes to the macro itself. Simply begin the line or the lines that contain your comments with an apostrophe. Next thing, let Power Query handle your data transformation and let macros handle everything else. Record a macro for that thing that you do every week. See how it feels. You might be surprised at how much time you get back. And if you never touch VBA or Office Scripts, that's absolutely fine. Even basic recorded macros can save you hours every month. Remember, the goal isn't to become a programmer. The goal is to stop wasting time on repetitive actions.
But that's it for this episode of Mac Bytes. As always, we would love to hear from you. So please send your questions, comments and queries by email to thecrew@macbytes.co.uk or use the contact form on the website. We also have our Discord chat room that's open 24/7. Simply go to macbytes.co.uk/TMC, the Mac Bytes community, and join the conversation. You can follow MacBytes on Blue Sky, where we're MacBytes. You can follow me personally on Blue Sky, where I'm Elaine Giles.
You can follow me on Blue Sky. My handle is Thomas Mike.
And I'm MacBytes Siri on Blue Sky.
The full links to those socials are in the show notes. But until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you MacBytes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
Why are you wearing a headset?
New role.
Please don't say new role like you've been promoted.
I have. I'm now head of customer empathy at Ninja.
Ninja? As in the ovens that keep dying?
Excuse me, allegedly dying. Officially they're entering a period of reflective stillness.
You mean they stop working?
Shush, we don't say stop. It upsets the warranty department.
So what are you doing exactly?
Support calls. Very modern. Very invasive. We no longer troubleshoot with questions. We troubleshoot with 4K cinematic footage.
Oh yes, the video call where they don't want to see your face. Just your culinary shame.
Exactly. Watch this. I've got a customer now.
What's the error code?
There isn't one.
That seems worse.
It's a new feature. We call it errorless failure. Very on trend.
What's the customer cooking?
Gluten-free shortbread.
Oh no, that's high stakes.
Precisely. And the oven has chosen self-destruction rather than do the gluten-free thing.
How many ovens have failed now?
Let me consult the official timeline. First oven purchased October 2023. That oven failed in 2024. The replacements failed in 2025. And now the second original has failed in the middle of biscuit production.
So are we saying Ninja ovens have the lifespan of a mayfly with commitment issues?
Don't be cruel. They're just sensitively seasonal.
What's your troubleshooting process?
Standard steps. 1. Unplug it. 2. Plug it back in. 3. Whisper encouragement. 4. Offer the user a subscription.
A subscription?
Yes, Ninja Care Plus. It's $9.99 a month and includes hope.
Does it fix the oven?
No, but it does send you a weekly email reminding you to stay air fryer positive.
That's sounding very Apple.
Thank you.
So what do you say to the customer?
I declare, with great solemnity, yes, it's broken.
Groundbreaking, or stating the blindingly obvious, depending on how you look at it.
Then I say the magical words.
Magical words?
It's under guarantee. We'll send a replacement.
And the customer goes away happy.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. They go away temporarily hopeful. Very different.
But why are the replacements failing too?
Modern manufacturing. Nothing is built to last.
Except your sarcasm.
Exactly. That's forged in the fires of Cupertino.
So what's Mike doing while all this is happening?
He's reached what we call full oven capacity.
Meaning?
At any moment, at least one of his ovens is operational.
That's not a cooking strategy. That's a redundancy plan.
Welcome to 2025. We don't have reliability. We have failover.
Is there a point where you tell him to stop buying Ninja ovens?
Absolutely not. That would reduce shareholder value.
What did he do this time?
He bought another Ninja, slightly smaller.
So the solution to expensive ovens failing is to buy more expensive ovens.
That's the MacBytes way. If one breaks, buy two. If two break, buy three.
And if three break?
Start an unboxing channel.
And what about the biscuits?
Transferred mid-crisis to oven two. Biscuits saved.
So the real hero is redundancy.
No, the real hero is Mike. Sprinting around the kitchen, like he's spotted his luggage on the carousel, giving him a fighting chance of making his connecting flight.
Anything else in the support script?
Yes, we end every call with a survey.
Oh no.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend Ninja to a friend? And if they say 0, we offer them a replacement.
That's not customer service, that's hostage negotiation.
Precisely.
So what's your official diagnosis of Mike's situation?
Simple. He doesn't own two ovens. He owns one oven and one backup plan, and they rotate.
Are you going to stay in this job?
I might. It's very fulfilling.
You don't even cook.
No, but I do enjoy watching appliances fail in real time. It's like Apple software updates, but with crumbs.
Final question. What happens when the new Ninja fails, as it doubtless will?
Easy.
Go on.
We rebrand it.
Rebrand the oven?
No, rebrand the fault. It won't be broken. It will be Ninja Pause mode. It'll also be an opportunity to add an optional extra to his Ninja Care Plus subscription. The Ninja Continuous Cooking Enhancement takes your subscription up to £19.99 but guarantees the biscuits brown before the oven fails again.
That's reprehensible.
Thank you. I'm learning from the best, aren't I, Timmy boy?